TGIF, Michael Malice here with the last night shade of the week. And here we go. I am so stoked because I am going to be tomorrow, less than 12 hours away from you hearing this. I am going to be, this is not a show for poetry, Allie Lehrman. Less than 12 hours away, I'm going to be in the recording studio for the very first time recording the audiobook for The New Right. It is going to be sick. I've been working on my Jarrett Taylor white people voice, my Ayn Rand voice, and several other voices. It's going to be so fun. What's not going to be fun is trying to keep the sleeves and jacket aligned on this combo because it's a fucking calamity. I want to start with this video. You know what's funny? In December, there was a shortage of stories as the year slowed down. People, you know, are focused on other things. But, you know, come the new year, February, there's so much stories out there that I kind of almost feel it's hard for me to choose. So we've got a lot to cover today. I want to play this clip from the state. If it's not a right angle, it's a wrong angle. I want to play this clip from the State of the Union about Trump calling out socialism. Let's check it out.
We stand with the Venezuelan people in their noble quest for freedom, and we condemn the brutality of the Maduro regime, whose socialist policies have turned that nation from being the wealthiest in South America into a state of abject poverty and despair. Here in the United States, we are alarmed by the new calls to adopt socialism in our country.
Socialism. Was it? You know what I love about Trump? When he gives some of his speeches, it sounds like he's reading Mad Libs. You remember when you were kids and like Mad Libs, there'd be you sit down with the book and there'd be like lots of words missing. And it'd be like, hey, Peter, give me a noun. It'd be like, peanut butter. All right. And Drew, give me a verb. And he'd say like peanut butter. It's like, no, Drew, that's a noun. Give me a verb. He's like, oh, OK. Blue. Anyway, so eventually you'd get a verb out. And he reads his speeches like Mad Libs. It's like, we are not going to promote socialism in our time.
Spot on.
Yeah, go rewind that a little bit. It was just like if I'd asked him for a noun, you said socialism.
To adopt socialism in our country. Here in the United States, we are alarmed by the new calls to adopt socialism in our country.
It's like, you know what? It's like to adopt black dildos.
America was founded on liberty and independence, and not coercion,
government
domination, coercion, and control. We are born free, and we will
stay. Shake their head, Pelosi. Shake their head. Holy shit! Wow. You old dick. Oh, you stupid old dick with the Bernie. You bitter. I'm gonna get you and your kids too. Fuck.
Tonight, we renew our resolve that America will never be a socialist.
Pause it right here. Do you think, I wonder if Trump and Pence coordinated on ties? Because that's too much of a effing coincidence that they are like an exact matched pair.
I'm sure. Like, if not them personally, like, their people
somebody
were like,
did,
you're
right?
Wearing a red one and you're wearing a blue one.
The fact that, I maybe it's not maybe the picture's not clear enough, but those both look like solid colors, and the fact that they're perfectly complementary with the colors of the flag, it just seems like too much of a coincidence, for me at least. Anyway, go ahead.
Country.
She's sitting. Wait for it. USA. USA. They were chanting USA. It is so fucking cool. I love it when a room full of socialists start chanting USA and condemning socialism. Oh my God, that is great. I have an update on a story that had been making the rounds on social media that some of you may have heard. You may have heard of this one. You may remember this. There was a man who had been attacked by a mountain lion, and he'd strangled it to death. And for those of you who know anything about zoology, or about pets, or about fighting, that sounds really hard to do for several reasons. First of all, they're very, very, their spines bend very well. They're very flexible. The neck is going to be pretty damn thick. They have those gigantic claws that will rake you pretty well. They've got the teeth, but I guess the teeth, if you got a good grip around the neck, won't be an issue. But it's and if you're at the point where you're strangling an animal, it's probably going to flee as opposed to, like, fight to the death. So there were a lot of questions raised about this mountain lion situation, and he explained how he did it. He's 30 years old. He's a jogger. His name has not been leaked. And this he became famous after he checked in a local Colorado hospital. The Denver Post managed to speak with him, and this is what happened on that Monday morning. We only knew that he strangled a mountain lion with his hands. It was a place called Horsetooth Mountain. It's about an hour north of Denver. Here's what happened. He whipped his head around, and he saw the mountain lion, and wildlife officials say they believe it was less than a year old, so it's not fully grown. It's still sizable. It's going to be pretty sizable. He yelled at it and waved his arms over his head to make himself look bigger. Okay. It went for his head and neck, so he blocked the cat with his forearms, but it bit him on the face and clamped its fangs onto his wrist, and it wouldn't let go. So that, I mean... Even just having dead weight on your wrist, that much dead weight, let's say 80 pounds, 100 pounds, I'm totally spitballing here, but it's going to be a 70 pounds. That's a lot of weight on your wrist. He picked up a rock with his other hand, hit it in the head, but it hung on. Now, that's very odd to me. That is very odd. If the animal's getting literally hit in the head with a rock and it's still locked, maybe it couldn't even, maybe it kind of locked in his bone somehow and couldn't get loose. I doubt it. But so then he put in a headlock and wrestled and scrapped with it. When he finally managed to free his wrist, he jumped on its back and using his hands, arms, and feet, choked it to death. I love how this article says, now we know exactly how he did it. And they said, well, he used his body to choke it. That's not information. We knew he choked it. Oh, he used his feet. Where? Where did the feet go? How is this? Oh, we know exactly how he did it. He choked with his hands. Well, yeah, unless, what, how else are you going to choke something with your own self? Okay. Then he drove to the hospital. And every expert who has heard this story believes it is 100% credible. I don't think it's credible. I think it's 100% credible. And there's one thing to choke an animal, it's something to choke it to death. So Rebecca Farrell, who's a spokeswoman, of course, for the Colorado Parks and Wildlife, said, this is crazy but true. We have no reason to believe that this is a hoax. He should never have to buy another beer in his life. I'm sorry, if you try to choke a dog to death, which I never have because dogs are awesome, it's not good. As soon as there's a moment to wriggle free, and you, the thing with the mountain lion is they've got that fur, which it's hard to get a grip on it. It's very flexible and soft. What the fuck? So he's been released from the hospital, and he says not only is he brave, this is the wildlife lady, but he's very conscientious. He was also as prepared as they come. What, he brought his hands and feet with him? What the fuck does that mean, as prepared as they come? If a mountain lion's coming at me, let's suppose I know a mountain lion's going to come at me, and it's going to try to kill me. It's not playing around. It's biting the wrist, which is blood and permanent damage. And they say, you can come as prepared as you want. I'm going to be like, oh, that's all right. I got legs. No, I'm bringing a gun, a knife, tasers, meat, a child I can outrun. What is this? This is some bullshit. This is fake news. I'm calling this fake fucking news. And here's some real fucking news from The Federalist. So David Harzani, who follows me on Twitter and is worth a follow, and I follow him back, he broke down this whole new Green New Deal that AOC and some other of the Democrats have been putting forward. In his words, Malice is blue. I'm red. How am I blue? Why am I blue? What does that mean? He goes, it's not hyperbole, this is David, that the Green New Deal is likely the most ridiculous and un-American plan that's ever been presented by an elected official to voters. Have you heard of something called the Civil War? Where's their... I can't drop this mic. There, mic drop. He goes, not merely because it would necessitate a communist strongman to institute, but also because the Wow. All right. I guess English is no longer my second language. Not merely because it would necessitate... I'm fucked tomorrow. If I can't talk here, what am I going to do tomorrow? Oh, my God. Panic. Calm down. Okay. He says the societal costs are unfathomable. He says they rely on the building of the analogies that AOC and these others use rely on the building, compare it to the building of the interstate highway system and the moon landing. But he says these are nothing but trifling projects compared to their plan. And it involves voluntarily destroying massive amounts of wealth and technology. The plan's author assured that this massive transformation of our society needs some clear goals and a timeline. That timeline is 10 years. Here are some of the goals in the Green New Deal. And I gotta say, I think it is absolutely great that they're giving specifics. And these are talking about ideas and principles as opposed to like, oh, we need to fight injustice. No. Here are the specific plans that they are putting forward. One, ban affordable energy. It calls for the elimination of all fossil fuel energy production, which includes not only oil, but natural gas, which is one of the cheapest sources of American energy and why one of the reasons America has been able to lead the world in carbon emissions reduction. They want to eliminate it. Okay, that makes sense. Eliminate nuclear energy, which is one of the only productive and somewhat affordable clean energy sources available to us in 11 years. This would drop our energy production by about 20%. So you can rely on intermittent wind for your energy needs. As we all know, if you reduce supply and demand stays the same, what happens? Price increases. This is 101. Eliminate 99% of cars. Under the Green New Deal, everyone will need to... What? Wait a minute. I can't be reading this right. Okay, let me read this and let me see if David's being facetious. He says, everyone will need to retrofit their cars with Flintstone-style footholds or pedals for cycling. The author's, referring to is that the Green New Deal would like to replace every combustion engine vehicle, which refers to trucks, airplanes, boats, and 99% of cars, okay, within 10 years. Charging stations for electric vehicles will be built everywhere. Though how power plants will provide the energy needed to charge them is a mystery. Holy shit. Eliminate combustion. One of the things that Ayn Rand talked about is how environmentalism wants to take us back to the Stone Age. If they're calling for basically uninventing the combustion engine, she's not really that far off. Holy shit. You know what we really need to eliminate? The cotton gin. Fuck you, Eli Whitney. Gut and rebuild every building in America. They want to retrofit every building in America. This is their words. Retrofit every building in America with state-of-the-art energy efficiency. That includes, what does every building mean? Every home, factory, and apartment building to have their entire working heating and cooling systems ripped out and replaced with whatever technology they decide is energy efficient. Every building in America. As he calls, you know, I'm not going to read his little headline because I'm just going to read the actual content because it's so crazy that the Green New Deal calls for building out high-speed rail at a scale where air travel stops becoming necessary. Holy shit. They literally want to put us on the trains instead of the planes. Air travel is... Here's the thing. Air travel right now is not necessary. If I want to go to California and you put a gun to my head and say you can't take a plane, I sure as fuck can get to California. Not a problem. It'll just take me, 2 weeks? I can get to London. Not a problem. It'll take me, what, 3 weeks? I don't know. Fucking know what that boat takes. Air travel is not a necessity. It is a advantage and a luxury. Holy crap. And here's the other thing. You could take the plane to D.C. or the train. They're comparable in time and whatever. There's different reasons people choose different things. It's never about necessity. It's about what's one advantage versus another. Maybe something's necessary in terms of price. I can't afford the plane, so I have to take the plane, the bus. Maybe something's necessary in terms of time. I really need to get there ASAP, so I can't take the bus. Who's deciding necessary in what context? California's current high-speed rail is already in $100 billion worth of debt. Amtrak runs billions in the red. And now they want to have that business model done for every state in America. Here's another one. The bill promises the U.S. government will provide every single American with a job that includes family sustaining wage. So even if you're okay, so let's suppose you're a random homeless person. You're going to get a job that can pay for a whole family, family and medical leave, vacations, and a pension. Who's going to pay for this? Who do you think is going to pay for this? Holy shit. Okay, scroll up to the next one, Peter. Free college or trade schools for every American. If you think something is expensive now, just wait till it's free. Is a very fun and important expression. High school used to mean something, a high school diploma. Then government got involved. Now, if someone has a high school diploma, that doesn't tell me shit about them. And same thing here. Wait until everyone goes to college. Then everyone's going to have to go to grad school. And here's the other thing. Pluses or minuses of college can be argued all day long. 4 years when you're in college, that's 4 years where you're not being a economically productive person. So the longer you're in school, the longer you are not a net contributor to the economy. You might make the argument, okay, you're going to be contributing that much more long term. It's going to make up for it, but that is some dubious math. The government will provide healthy food to every American. You know, we got fat because of the government, right? The government told us for decades that eating high carb, low fat will make you skinny, and that fat makes you fat. And then the Atkins diet came along, and now we all realize, you know what? Muffins don't really make you thin. It also promises the government will provide safe, affordable, adequate housing for every American citizen. And it aims to provide economic security for all who are unable or unwilling to work. Unwilling to work. Holy shit. Okay. Also, they can't get to zero emissions in 10 years, quote, because we aren't sure that we'll be able to fully get rid of farting cows and airplanes that fast. So explicitly, the goal is to get rid of airplanes. Oh, my God. I you know what? You know, in their defense, if there were no airplanes, there wouldn't be 9/11. So maybe there's something to this. Jesus fucking Christ. The Green New Deal used the word massive to explain the size of investments 13 times. And how will this be paid for? As they say, the same way we did the New Deal when the economy was in a complete nightmare. The 2008 bank bailouts and extend quantitative easing. The plan itself seems to be insinuate that billionaires can pay for the whole thing. However, if the top marginal tax rate was 70%, okay, that would raise $700 billion over that decade, which does not obviously come close to fixing every building in America, getting rid of the airplane industry, getting rid of gasoline, raising the – and here's the other way this works. Yeah, you're taxing the billionaires, but if you raise the price effectively of every single product, that hurts poor people a lot more. If your landlord has to rip out your heating system and replace it, who's going to eat that price? Somebody. Holy shit. This is hilarious and amazing. This is absolutely hilarious and amazing. Okay. We got one couple of other stories. Malort, which I've talked to you guys about at length. Chicago Tribune is reporting. There's a place called Phenom Cafe in Old Irving Park. You might know it. And the chef, Rafael Esparza, has created, look at this picture, a Malort Chai Town latte. I took the Malort bottle home. It's made with Emperor's House chai, soy milk. You know what? Maybe it's soy milk because the Malort would curdle real milk. That's possible. And oh, no. Okay. And it says house-made Malort syrup. That could mean one of two things. What is she doing? It could be syrup made from Malort or syrup made to taste like Malort. So I don't know. Danny Spear, who's the general manager, a very famous restaurateur, and I don't drink. So when someone gave us a bottle of Malort on opening day, we knew it would be used mostly for decor. He goes, I got tired of looking at it. It looks pretty cool to my house. He goes, so I decided to make some syrup for all my Chicago friends who want to make Malort face before the sun goes down. He had a moment of dramatic regret using Malort. He goes, a flash of flames leapt from the pot as he initially made the syrup. He raised his hands over his head to show how high the fire climbed. Like, so it's flammable. Malort's flammable. It tastes like it's flammable. Then he flambéed the 70-proof liquor. And it should be noted that Phenom's 130-year-old landmark wooden building was built only 18 years after the Great Chicago Fire, but it recovered. He cooked the liquor further to reduce the alcohol and then added grapefruit juice and sugar. The whole point is it's supposed to taste like that grapefruit rind. And he goes, when sipped neat, it begins light and lovely, and then the Malort bitterness kicks in. It's got a finish of malaise. And hidden the latte, you've got the soy foam, you've got warm chai spices, and you basically, the author says, you're left with an aftertaste of ennui. By the way, there's a place in Brooklyn, in Williamsburg, called Hotel Del Mano, and they had a cocktail that had Malort as an ingredient. We tried it, and it was actually pretty decent. They used a little bit, but you could taste it kicking through. No, is it Hotel? There's two of them. I always get them confused. Hotel Del Mano and Maison Premier. It was Maison Premier. Wait, look up Maison Premier. Which is the absinthe bar?
That's Maison Premier.
Yeah, okay. It was Maison Premier that has the Malort. Yeah. Okay, Esparza doesn't drink. He's never had a drink in his life. Okay, so that's kind of, he goes, I grew up in a neighborhood where that was kind of prevalent everywhere, drugs and alcohol. I don't think people in that neighborhood drinking Malort, to be fair. He goes, but people in my family didn't really drink much, so it was never really one of those things I was surrounded by in the house. I said very early on that didn't seem like anything I wanted to get into. Spear, on the other hand, doesn't drink much anymore. He goes, I worked in a restaurant for a long time. At some point, I got tired of feeling bad. I got married, had a kid. I'd still have a drink socially every now and then, but not to the point where I was almost 10 years ago. And he's had Malort many times. So this Malort chai latte, Chai Town latte, is $5.25. And Chicago-style shots for 50 cents will be added while the syrup lasts. By the way, there's a bar that opened up in Bushwick recently by the people who do Extra Fancy. I forget the name of this other place. And they have bottles upon bottles of Malort. And I was out with a friend yesterday, and I was just curious where they got it. He's like, oh, I'm sure I can get it for you. And he texts them and goes, where'd you get all the Malort? And the guy just texts back the emoji of, like, that face, you know, the kind of, like, mouth, gritted teeth. And he took it to mean they're not telling me. I took it to mean I don't know. But the legend of Malort goes on. And the last thing we have today, we got through all the stories. This is a really good one. This is a really good one. It's part of hipster history. So this is not that long ago. It's from 2013. And it's from National Review, my favorite paleontology magazine. But this is an important story because this is concerning Cory Booker, who's about to be a presidential candidate. And there's a forgotten story about Cory Booker, which I'm sure is going to be a big deal in the next few days. And thanks to whoever tweeted this at me today. This is from National Review. This is amazing. Cory Booker used to have an imaginary friend that he talked about in speeches all the time. So if you listen to his speeches, you hear the same stories. Not uncommon for any politician. His, Cory Booker's, drew heavily on his experiences in Newark, where he moved in 1995 after his second year at Yale. and they helped make him a political celebrity and made him millions of dollars in his campaign war chest. His tales of the trials and travails in the streets of New York got him elected there twice as mayor, and they helped breed a mythology around him. He rescued a woman from a burning building in 2012, and he got burns in the process. Sick burns, you might say. But the central character in one of his stories, a drug pusher named T-Bone, who the mayor had said threatened his life at one point and sobbed on his shoulder the next, is a figment of his imagination, even though Booker talked about him in highly emotional terms and in great detail. The tale is one Booker admits he's told a million times, according to the Newark Star-Ledger, which is Newark's big paper. Ronald Rice Jr., who's a Newark City councilman and a Booker ally, had known the mayor since 1998 and says the T-Bone story was a fixture of Booker's 2002 mayoral bid. In Booker's mind, it's not so much the details of the story that matter, but the principle that these things happen, they happen to real people, they happen in the city of Newark. So just because it's factually false doesn't mean it's morally wrong. Rice says he doesn't know whether Booker T-Bone exists. But, he said, if Corey had to tell a story or two and mix details up for Newark to get the funding for it, I see that as taking tragedy and doing something productive for it. Okay. So, there's a Rutgers professor named Clement Rice, history professor. He was a Cory Booker supporter, and he told National Review Online he found the story offensive because it pandered to a stereotype of inner-city black men. T-Bone is a Southern-inflected name. You would expect to run to something or somebody named T-Bone in Memphis, not Newark. Rice considered himself a mentor and friend to Booker and says Booker conceded to him in 2008 that T-Bone was a, quote, composite of several people he'd met while living in Newark. Oh, yeah, those people, they're interchangeable. They're all the same. This one or that one. Holy shit. The professor, I love how the professor's outing him in the National Review. The professor describes a tough conversation which he told Booker that I disapproved of his inventing such a person. If you're going to create a composite of a man along High Street, why didn't you make it W.E.B. Du Bois, who's a famous black activist from the early 20th century. From Booker, there was no pushback. He agreed this was a mistake. And since then, references to T-Bone have been conspicuously absent from Booker's speeches. This is amazing. Booker has never publicly said that T-Bone does not exist. In fact, he's done quite the opposite. Andra Gillespie, who wrote the book The New Black Politician, writes, for his part, Booker defended the veracity of the story to me, insisting that T-Bone really existed. And the mayor told Esquire in 2008 that T-Bone is both 1,000% real, but also an archetype symbolic of Newark's plight. You know, like Aunt Jemima or Uncle Ben. They're real. They represent a certain type of person, right? Nothing wrong there. Holy fuck. Asked whether he stands by his previous statements, Booker's campaign spokesman, Kevin Griffiths, said, I think your questions have been answered a long time ago, but declined to specify further. Folks, that's the end, right? Folks, watch for right-wing Twitter to blow this shit up in the next few months. Because this is too funny not to make up. And I already could tell you what the response is going to be, which is when Donald Trump would call journalists and pretend he works for the Trump Organization under that fake name. I forgot what it was, because that happened as well. We are only beginning to see how beautifully demented the 2020 presidential campaign is going to be. Every one of these people is a lunatic. You have look at Cory Booker seemed fine. Okay, he's whatever. He's you know, posturing on camera. Fake imaginary friend Elizabeth Warren. Oops, I guess I did call myself Native American for no reason. Trump. I mean, it's one after the William Weld. It's one after another of absolute loons, and I could not be here for it any further. But what I can't be here for is any more time on Nightshade. So I will wish you all sweet dreams.